Chapter 4. Peter Quint. I understood how very frightened she was when I heard her first words as she came round the corner of the house. "What is the matter with you?" "How do you know that there is anything the matter with me?" I asked. "You're as white as a sheet. You look awful." I put out my hand to her and she took it. Then I hugged her, needing to feel her close to me. She gave a little movement of surprise, but did not pull away. "What has happened?" she asked. "You look dreadful." "Well," I said, "I've been frightened." I understood by the look on Mrs. Gross's face that she did not want to be frightened again, but she knew she had to listen to me. "What I saw just now looked even more dreadful than I do," I said. She held me tightly by the hand.
"What was it?"
"An extraordinary man, looking into the dining room from here."
"What extraordinary man?"
"I haven't any idea," I said.
Mrs. Gross looked around us in confusion.
"Where has he gone?"
"I don't know that either," I replied.
"Have you seen him before?"
"Yes, once, on the top of the tower," I said, pointing at it.
"But he was a stranger?"
she asked. "Yes," I replied.
Mrs. Gross then said,
"What was he doing on the tower?"
"Only standing there and looking down at me."
She thought for a minute.
"Was he a gentleman?"
I found that I did not need to think. "No."
"No," she repeated. "And it was nobody from the village? And nobody who works in the house?"
"Nobody, nobody. I know that," I said.
"But if he isn't a gentleman," she went on.
But I interrupted her.
"What is he? He's a horror."
"A horror?
I don't know what he is," I cried.
Mrs. Gross looked around her once again and then turned to me, saying,
"It's time for us to go to church."
"Oh, I can't go to church," I cried. "I can't leave the children alone."
"You're afraid?"
she said.
"I'm afraid of him," I replied.
Mrs. Gross's large face showed me that she was thinking, and she decided that she wanted to know more. She wanted to know if it had been dark when I saw the man on the tower. I told her that it was not dark, and that I had seen him as clearly as I now saw her in front of me. She wondered how he had got in, and in reply I laughed.
"I did not have the chance to ask him," I said. "And this evening, as you see, he wasn't able to get in."
"So all he does is look in," she said.
"I hope that is all he does," I said.
She was no longer holding my hand, and she turned away from me a little. I waited for a moment, but she did not say anything, so I said,
"Go to church. Goodbye. I must stay here and watch."
Slowly, she faced me again. "Are you afraid for the children?" We looked at each other.
"Aren't you?" I asked.
Instead of answering, she went nearer to the window and put her face against the glass.
"How long was he here?"
"Until I came out. I came to meet him."
Mrs. Gross turned round and said,
"I couldn't have done that."
I laughed again and replied,
"I had to come out. It was my duty to do that."
Mrs. Gross looked at me for a moment before she answered,
"I have my duty too."
Then she went on, "What's he like?" He's like nobody.
Nobody?
She repeated. He has very short red hair and a long pale face. Beneath his thick dark eyebrows, his eyes are small and they are sharp and strange. His mouth is wide and his lips are thin. He's tall and strong, but he is certainly not a gentleman. He doesn't wear a hat.
Mrs. Gross's face had become paler as I talked. Her round eyes stared, and her mouth fell open.
He's not a gentleman, she gasped.
You know him then, I said.
I could see that she was trying not to look so shocked.
But he is handsome,
she asked quickly.
Very handsome, I replied.
And how is he dressed?
In gentleman's clothes, I said. But they aren't his clothes.
Mrs. Gross suddenly groaned loudly.
Oh, they are the master's clothes.
You do know him, I cried.
She could not speak for a second. Then she gasped,
Quint.
Quint?
Peter Quint, the master's valet, his own particular servant when he was here.
When the master was here, I said, feeling confused.
Quint never wore a hat, and we knew that he took the master's clothes,
Mrs. Gross explained.
He was here with the master last year. Then the master went away, and Quint was alone.
I tried to follow what she was saying.
Alone?
He was alone with us, she said, groaning. And he was in charge.
And where did he go?
I asked. She paused for so long that I wondered if she was going to speak again. At last she said,
He went away.
Went where?
The look on her face was extraordinary as she replied,
I don't know where he went. He died.
Died?
I almost shrieked. She seemed to grow a little and stand more firmly on the ground as she repeated the shocking information.
Yes, Mr. Quint is dead.
Of course, we had to talk much more on this subject. I had to lie down for an hour immediately after hearing the terrible information Mrs. Gross had given me, but we met later in the evening in the schoolroom. Mrs. Gross learned from me how I had often seen terrifying things like the horror I have just described. I could see how much this troubled her and how much she pitied me. She had seen nothing that day or on any other day, but she accepted that I had seen the ghost. She accepted it and pitied me without seeming to believe that I was mad. We agreed between us that night that we could bear things together. I knew then, I think, that I was brave enough to protect my pupils from evil. But it took a while for me to be sure that Mrs. Gross could do her duty too. Mrs. Gross had only bad memories of Peter Quint and of the months he had spent at Bly. I asked her why she had never told her master that Peter Quint was a wicked man.
It's not my fault that I didn't tell the master, she said. He hates it when people complain. And Quint never behaved badly to him, so the master never saw any bad in him.
I understood this from what I had learned of my employer, but I said to Mrs. Gross, If I had known what you knew, I would have told him. She felt that I did not approve of her doing nothing and defended herself.
I know I was wrong, but really I was terrified.
Terrified of what?
by the things that man could do. Quint was so clever.
And weren't you afraid of what he could do and say to the children? You were in charge of them.
No, I wasn't, she replied, sounding very upset. The master left Quint here because Quint was not very well, and country air is supposed to be good for your health. The master thought his valet was a good man, so he was in charge of everything. The house, the servants, and yes, even them. He and Miles were great friends.
I had to interrupt her. In charge of the children? I almost shrieked. That horror! And you could bear it?
No, I couldn't. And I can't now.
And the poor woman began to cry. I continued to think, and I said to Mrs. Gross, it is strange that the children have never mentioned him. If they were great friends, Miles must remember.
Oh, it was Quint who liked to play with Miles. He made himself into the boy's friend.
She paused. Then she said, sounding angry,
he behaved that way with everybody.
I did not think any more about this at the time, because at that moment I understood clearly what I had seen earlier. He was looking through the window for little Miles, I said.
But how do you know?
I know, I know, I know, I cried. And you know this too!
For a week, Mrs. Gross and I kept coming back together and talking about things in the way we did that Sunday night. I kept feeling that there was something that she had not told me about the months that evil man had been at Bly. It was a time that ended, I learned, when Peter Quint was found dead by the side of the road from the village early one winter's morning. It was decided that he had fallen on the icy road at night on his way home from the village pub. But there were secrets and mysteries about his life that people whispered about, so they wondered if someone had killed him. I shivered when I heard this. I find it hard to explain my thoughts and feelings at this time. In some ways, I felt joy about what I had been asked to do, to protect those beautiful little children. I hoped that my employer would get to know that I had succeeded. I feel proud, when I look back, that I understood clearly what my job was. I began to watch the children, waiting for what might happen next. This was so hard to bear that I began to feel I might become mad. But then, something did happen. And it proved what was wrong at Bly. One hot afternoon, I was with little Flora in the park while Miles was indoors reading a book. One of the charming things about the children was the way they did not really need me. They used me in their games, if they wanted to, or let me go with them without expecting me to do anything. Flora and I were by the big lake, and I have forgotten what part I had in her game. I was sitting on a stone seat that gave me a view of the lake, and Flora was by the water, playing with a damp piece of wood. Suddenly, I became aware that someone was watching us from the other side of the lake. I was alarmed and straightaway looked at Flora, who was not far away from me. I was waiting for a cry or sound of alarm from her. But she said nothing. In fact, I noticed that while I was looking at the figure watching us, Flora had turned her back on the lake. She had picked up a stick and was looking down, pushing it into a hole in the piece of wood as if she had decided to make a boat. I was sure that the figure was still watching us and raised my eyes to face it.